The joy of doing this was not that we're on a podcast, which I have to say I actually forgot several seconds in. The joy of it is just that I get to tell my friend Amanda about books I love.
Well, my whole holiday book list is entirely changed now.
My work here literally is done.
Do you like books?
I'm outlining a new writing project.
Who wrote this book?
Read it. What are you reading?
Sometimes I'd write something.
What are you writing?
Have you written anything lately?
I'm Amanda Stern, and this is Bookable. On today's show, happy holidays! It's the most wonderful time of the year, in a hellish year that totally forking sucked. But one standout for me in 2020, all of the great new books. And here on Bookable, we featured a bunch of them. Today, our streak of good luck continues. The one and only Neil Gaiman dropped in to share his unique recommendations of what to give the book lover in your life for the holidays. You know Neil from his work like Good Omens, The Sandman, Coraline, American Gods, Stardust, and so many more that I honestly lose track of it all. We were supposed to talk for a mere 10 minutes, but he had so many amazing recommendations we just kept going. And spoiler alert, the picks were so good I ended up buying most of the books he mentioned. For myself. Enjoy. So, Neil Gaiman, what are you getting people, what books are you getting your loved ones for the holidays?
Well, one of the books that I know that I'm giving people, in fact, one of the books that I've already given people this Christmas, the only thing that so far, and we're recording this on the 2nd of December, that I have actually wrapped up and sent off is this book. And it is called A Humourment, a Treated Victorian Novel by Tom Phillips. And the copy I'm holding up, because people cannot see it, is the fourth edition, although the copy that I've actually given to my friends as Christmas presents that I sent out is the final edition. And I forget whether that's the fifth or the sixth edition, but it's the one still available in hardcover because I like giving people hardcovers when I can, but this is a paperback. And Tom Phillips is an artist who in the 1960s found a Victorian novel called A Human Document and created an entirely new book out of it, taking pages and painting the pages, painting pictures on the pages, finding poems, finding words, finding a whole new plot as out of the words that were printed on the pages. So page 11 says, okay, the changes are the method. Okay, it is a humourment. Okay, it is a rule that a rule rules the fiction. Okay, life of judged people detail the human opera. The book rules. Okay. And into that, you have drawings, you have illustration, you have what looks like a photograph or a postcard of people on the beach. All joined together. And it's, I don't know what it is. It's a graphic novel. It's a piece of art. He's been through many editions, and each of the editions are because he keeps working on it, or he kept working on it. So each, by the time you get to the final edition, I don't think there are any pages left from the first edition. I believe the other ones change out different pages. And it's all about a man named Togue, Mr. Togue, T-O-G-E, a word that only ever occurs where the original word together cropped up in the original novel. And it's incredibly beautiful. And it's And for me, it's the perfect gift book because it's something that nobody would buy themselves. Nobody knows they want it. And yet when you give it to somebody, they go off into a corner and they look at it and then they read it and then they combine the words and the pictures in strange ways. And then they get to ponder what art is and ponder what an artist has made out of an ancient novel. And it's all enormously fun.
Wow, that sounds amazing. That is completely my kind of book. That is incredible. I've never heard of this. I love it. I'm so excited.
And so I'm going to stay on the UK side of the pond for my second book. And my second book is called Longhand. It is by Andy Hamilton. It has a blurb on the cover. It has two blurbs on the cover. One from Stephen Fry that says, a glorious comic novel, a brilliant satire, an artwork, and a historical document. Never has the word readable meant more. Never has the word manuscript been more literal. Hand-wringing, rib-tickling, spine-tingling, and heart-wringing, uniquely brilliant. That's Stephen Fry. And somebody called Neil Gaiman says, from beginning to end, a joy to read, crossings out and all, a tale of mingled tragedy and comedy, disaster and triumph, a handwritten love letter to a woman we never meet that's also a love letter to humanity. And what is wonderful about Longhand is it is indeed written in longhand by Andy Hamilton, who has beautiful handwriting. Andy Hamilton's beautiful handwriting is the only reason this book is even possible, because were I to write a book to be published in longhand, I do not think people would be anywhere near as welcoming or as entranced. And the book begins with a letter that is typed from some solicitors saying that, you know, as you could further to our conversation, please find enclosed the handwritten manuscript that I discussed with you. As you can see, it takes the form of a substantial letter that our client, Ms. Elizabeth Dalgleish, discovered hidden in her house. The missive was left for her by Mr. Malcolm Galbraith, her partner. It appears to have been written over a couple of days and provides, in part at least, the unverifiable account of why he disappeared so suddenly. And it is a book that I went into knowing nothing other than I think Andy Hamilton is a genius. And when he said, will you read this thing? I said, yes, of course. That it is funny, human, that it plunges into myth, that anything you tell anybody about it instantly becomes spoilers. It makes it really difficult, and also makes it difficult that the moment that you start reading reviews of it, because you can't not review it without giving away the central idea, any reviews are going to spoil it for you. But let us just say that Malcolm Galbraith is a great deal older than he would appear, that he is indeed, he may or may not be the mythical figure that he tells us that he is, living a normal life in Scotland, and that one of the glorious conceits of the book is that while it is being handwritten by him, over a period of about a week, things happen. So he will break off writing it, and then when he comes back, everything's changed, and he's now telling us what's going on. It's beautifully constructed, beautifully written, hits all of the right notes, and is just wonderful. So Longhand by Andy Hamilton, published by Unbound.
And that's really his handwriting. It's not a font.
No, that's Andy's handwriting. I get letters from him every now and again, and they are in that handwriting. And furthermore, part of the fun of it is every now and then he'll cross things out and you can see, you can sort of follow the characters, what he's writing and what he was about to say, and then just thought better of and said something else instead or whatever.
Wow.
But because Andy's handwriting is this very, very beautiful and incredibly legible handwriting, the whole concept works. Let's alternate back with some nonfiction. And this is a book called Featherhood by Charlie Gilmore. And I'm very much looking forward to giving people this book. It has blurbs from that there Neil Gaiman on it. And Charlie sent me a copy of it to read. I don't really know Charlie. I'm not sure that I've met Charlie since he was 3. But Charlie's mother, Polly, is a very, very dear friend of mine. She was my first ever book publicist on my first ever book, which happened to be her first book that she ever got to publicize as a junior book publicist. And back in 1985. And so I got to watch Polly get promoted as a young book publicist. And I got her, I was very proud when she became head of publicity at Jonathan Cape. And then very sad and kind of angry on her behalf when she left Jonathan Cape because she'd taken an author on an author tour and got pregnant. And she went off with the author, who was a poet named Heathcote Williams, who at the time had just written some very big books about poems, one about elephants and one about whales. And Heathcote was an actor and various other things. And they went off together. And then all of a sudden, one day, my friend Polly is back in my life and with a tiny baby. And the relationship with Heathcote has completely broken down. She woke up one day and he was gone. And he basically refused to see her anymore. And she'd taken the baby and come back. And Polly then, a few years after that, I moved to America and I got a message from her, a phone call saying, are you doing anything Thursday week? Because my boyfriend is in a pop group and I'm going to be in Minneapolis with him. And I said, of course, I'd love to come and see you. And I came in, they were staying in the hotel under her name. So I went up and there is little Charlie. There is Polly. And a couple of minutes later, her boyfriend comes in and she introduces him as David Gilmore. And I suddenly realize that the pop group in question is Pink Floyd. And I had a marvelous day with Polly as watching the Pink Floyd gig in Minneapolis in whatever it was, 1992, 93, 94. So Polly and I have stayed in touch. We've stayed friends. And which also meant that I got to watch what happened when Charlie, as a young university student, got into incredible trouble with the English legal system and wound up being sent to prison for swinging on the cenotaph, the war memorial, during some student riots. He was photographed doing this, and it was decided he had to be made an example of. So what Charlie has written is a book that is about adopting a magpie. It's about a fallen magpie, a baby magpie that he winds up being given. About discovering that Heathcote Williams had a jackdaw. That they, this father and son, both at different times, seem to have bonded with having these corvids. It becomes a book about Charlie's relationship with his missing father, trying to understand the clues, what had happened. This weird relationship with this awful kind of magician, writer, poet person who would stumble into Charlie's life, do something appalling, and then disappear. And it somehow becomes this beautiful, moving book about fathers and sons, about parenthood, all through a magpie. And it's honestly a book that is structurally astonishing. It shouldn't work, and yet he pulls it off. He builds this beautiful structure that is about who he is. It's about magpies. It's about raising a magpie. It's about who Heathcote Williams was. It's about this intersection. It's about fathers. And of course, the title, Featherhood, is sort of about, it's all sort of in there. So that's a book that I loved. I was thrilled. It's making it onto the British Book of the Year lists right now, which makes me incredibly happy. At the same time that Polly Sampson's book about Hydra, the Greek island in the early 1960s, is also making it onto the Best of the Year things. So that, which is just, I love that. I love that they are both Best of the Year people. I will give people Carlo Rovelli's amazing book, There Are Places in the World Where Rules Are Less Important Than Kindness. And Carlo is a quantum physicist who happens to be one of the best writers I know about science and about humanity and about how the human race thinks and about culture, and everything that he writes about is about putting things into perspective, giving us background on things. This is a collection of essentially newspaper essays or magazine essays that he's written over the years. They range from things like, Aristotle, Newton, and Einstein, to student revolt, to COVID, to who was Copernicus and why was it that Copernicus had the same education that Carlo Rovelli does. They are delightful, and over and over again about how we as a species, we as this thing that is Homo sapiens, how we move, how we improve, how we take each other up, how we lift each other. And it's such a beautiful book. And just as a collection of essays to dip into, browse through and put down, There are places in the world where rules are less important than kindness. Poems. I guess a humorment is in some ways a giant poem, but this is a 100-year-old poem. And when I was 12 or 13, I bought and fell in love with a book called Lud in the Mist by Hope Merlies. And I loved it. It's a fantasy novel, I guess, from about 1926, that is also a detective novel, also a history novel. There's so many wonderful things going on. There's an awful lot of English folklore in there. And by the time I was 1920, I wanted to know more about Hope Merlies. There was nothing that I could find. And I went to the British Museum. And in the middle of the British Museum back then, they had the British Museum Library. And the British Museum Library was this place that had been unchanged for 100 years. And the British Museum Reading Room and the British Library Reading Room. And you would go in and you would sit there and they would bring you books. And I wanted to know what else Hope Merlies had done. And they brought me a couple of different editions of a privately published poetry collection she'd written in or collected in the 60s, I think, called Moods and Tensions. It was terrible. Everything in it was terrible. There was no genius there. There was no beauty. I was a bit puzzled. And then they brought me a copy of a book called Paris. And I read Paris. I didn't quite understand it, but I knew that I was reading this, I knew that it was utterly different from the Moods and Tensions poems. This was one long poem. And there was so much stuff about it that I didn't understand. I didn't know the significance of the fact that it was published by the Hogarth Press. I didn't understand the significance of the fact that it was a modernist poem. That it was playing with language, that it seemed to be and felt like a journey across Paris. Sometimes in a train, sometimes in a bus, sometimes walking. And what you're seeing in this giant sort of stream of consciousness. And you would get line, just opening it at random to page 7. In the churches during Lent, Christ and the saints are shrouded in mauve veils. Far away in gardens, crocuses. Chionodoxa, the princess in a Serbian fairy tale. Goldsmith's chef d'oeuvre, lily of the valley. Soon, dog roses will stare at gypsies, wains and pilgrimages. All the time, scentless Lyon's roses, icy plastic, named after wives of mayors. And you just get this sort of, it's like the beautiful stream of consciousness. And in a world in which The Wasteland had already been published, which was the world in which I read it, in the late 1970s, early 1980s, it was not particularly shocking or stunning. And then I realized that it was published in 1920. And it was a book by a 26-year-old author that actually prefigures so much of what was to come. And it's sort of a weird, it's like if you, there are so many things where right now we mark it in the sand as having been T.S. Eliot in The Wasteland, except it kind of starts with Hope Merlies and Paris. And one of the great things about 2020, a year which is, let's face it, shitty, is that it is the 100th anniversary of Paris, a Poem, and Hope Merley's Paris has been brought back into print by Faber and Faber. It is a... That it exists makes me happy. That it is going to give Merley's the place that I think she should always have had. Is, I think, huge and important. And I plan to give it to my friends.
Neil, I think you should just have your own podcast. It's just Neil Talks About Books. Seriously.
I don't think I ever could, because I'm it for me, the joy is telling somebody. So the joy of doing this was not that we're on a podcast, which I have to say, I actually forgot several seconds in. The joy of it is just that I get to tell my friend Amanda about books I love.
Well, my whole book list has just changed. My whole holiday book list is entirely changed now.
My work here literally, is done.
It really is. But I could listen to you talk about books forever. This is the best holiday gift guide anyone's ever heard, ever, ever.
Now people are going to have to buy all their books from the UK.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. You're amazing. And I miss you.
You're so welcome. Miss you too. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Time for a short break. When we come back, Teen Bookable is back to share what books they're gifting this year. And we talk way too much about fluffers. Stick around. Hello. Hello.
Hey, Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Bo.
Hello. How are you?
Travis.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Travis. How are you guys?
Doing okay. You?
I'm good. I'm well. I'm fine.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Getting in the spirit.
Are we? I mean, yes, we are.
Yes.
Totally getting in the spirit. So, I want to hear what you guys are getting people, and I want to hear first from Andrew.
Okay. Oh, I'm excited about this. So my parents love memoir and they love autobiographies and biographies of historical figures. And I guess it's been 2 years ago, I got my mom the Michelle Obama Becoming, mm-hmm. and she loved it. So I'm going to be real original this year and I'm going to follow up with Barack Obama's A Promised Land for her. And I think she's going to love it. But my dad is also a big foodie. Anytime he visits me here in New York, we love going out to great restaurants. He's particularly a David Chang fan. So I'm going to pick up David Chang's Eat a Peach, which I think will be really exciting. And this is kind of a non-book bonus, but I've been kind of flipping around eBay and Etsy lately, looking at these like either homemade or vintage antique bookends. That's a gift I've been giving people, but I stumbled across an old book scented candle from Frostbeard Studio. So if you want to make your house smell like an old dusty library for the low, low price of $7, head to Etsy and look for Frostbeard Studio's old book scented candle.
Are we doing ads?
Yeah, I guess we got to get a sponsorship after that, huh?
That's a great list.
That's what I got.
All right. That's a good list. I like it. So, okay. Bo, what are you getting people?
I didn't know we were talking about what we were getting people. I thought we were talking about what we're reading.
That's what I meant to say. Bo, what are you reading?
No. I do actually have some books I'm getting for people. I'm getting Raven Leilani's Luster for both of my daughters and for my half-sister, Abby, and for my, I'm not being very imaginative, but I think it's a great book, and for my stepmother. So I'm kind of passing that book around to a lot of people. And I'm also getting Esther Cast, Isabel Wilkerson's book.
Oh, great.
Because I think she'll be interested in it. And, but the book I was going to tell you about is, so my sister Liza and I, when we were young, when I was 10 and she was 13, we met Muhammad Ali. And it was probably the coolest moment in both of our lives, like ever. And it was really fun. We got to hang out with him. And with him was this guy that everyone called Bundini. You know who he is?
Bundini?
Yeah.
No.
Bundini Brown. No, Bundini Brown. B, B, B. Like Houdini, but Bundini. And he was Ali's hype man. He was the guy that got Ali really pumped up before a fight and got all that poetry out of him. And I'm reading a biography, which has been really well received by fans of Muhammad Ali, called Bundini. So I am going to be giving that to the people in my life I know who are Ali fans. Sure, there's a few of them.
That's awesome. I've never heard of that Bundini fluffer. But but I think that's going to be the name of my next book is Bundini Fluffer.
I was thinking band name. You should perform under that.
Yeah. Yep. I
have to say, Andrew's idea of a band name actually gives me the T-shirt I want.
What is it?
Bundini.
Oh,
the Bundini Fluffer.
Yeah, but that's my name.
I know what I'm getting, Bo. Now
I trademarked that name. It's patent pending.
Okay,
but you can borrow it. Well, those are great books. I'm very excited that that Luster is getting a family spread. That's great. I know a lot of people are reading it and loving it. Travers.
Yes,
Travies. Traverson.
After the Karen Russell article, I thought that sounded like a good title for my wife, who's a big Karen Russell fan. So I'm getting her a sleep donation just to see what she thinks of it. So pretty excited about that one. And the other one is Susanna Clarke, who I actually know that Neil Gaiman was a big fan of too. Released another book just a couple of months ago called Piranesi. So that kind of lines up the Bundini factor of things are just sort of fun to say.
Hmm.
We could get matching T-shirts. Piranesi, Bundini.
Exactly.
And who's getting that book?
My wife, and then also for me.
Gotcha.
And what about what about your kids? Are you going to get any books for them? How about Luster for the little one?
There you go. Not really sure. My 5-year-old daughter has decided that she's a rapper now, so I'm trying to see if I can find a type of sort of child-appropriate book about rap, just to see if that ends up going anywhere. But yeah, she's started prefacing a lot of things with yo and making some very suspect rhymes that don't really go together, but it's kind of a interesting stream of consciousness. So if anyone has any good children's hip-hop books, I'm all ears.
Anything for the, do you have a boy? I thought you had a boy. Did I make that up?
He's 2 and he's, I think he would just tear apart books for the time being. So he's more in his Lego phase.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's always, Batman and Spider-Man he's really into these days. The Darth Vader phase has passed a little bit, so. But yeah, nothing really springs to mind for him because he just keeps tearing everything.
Those are great picks, Travis.
Thank you.
You know what we long to hear, though, from you? Just one sentence in The Voice. Any sentence with The Voice.
Bundini Fluffer is joining the dark side.
Thank you. That is wonderful. Sure. All right, I guess it's my turn. So I am getting for a friend whose name I won't say because I'm seeing her tonight for dinner and she actually listens to this podcast. I'm getting her a book called How to Tell If You Are Human by Jessie Randall. And it's Jessie Randall is a woman who is a poet. And this book is diagram poems. And it's really cool. It's like she wrote instructions for how to be a human on top of old lost artifacts from the late 18th and early 19th century. And it's just visually really interesting and it's funny. So I'm going to give this to a friend of mine who I'm seeing tonight. My mother, who does not listen to this podcast, so I can say that, is getting The Yellow House by Sarah M. Broom. I'm sure you guys have heard of this book. It's a memoir and it's about a family, Sarah Broom's family, and this yellow house that she grew up in New Orleans. And sort of the pull of the house and how it keeps bringing her back home even long after the house is gone.
Didn't she? Well, that was a National Book Award winner, no?
Yes. All right. And then I have three books. I don't know who's getting them yet.
Me.
But maybe Andrew. All right. But probably my sister and her boyfriend and maybe my father. So I might give my father this book. It's a book of short stories called If I Had Two Wings, and it's by Randall Keenan. A sad little story about Randall Keenan is that he was recommended for Bookable to me by Sean Stuart Ruff. And I wrote up an email to Randall and I had almost finished it. I put it in the saved drafts. And later that day, he died. And so I never sent it, but I did end up buying his books. And so I'm going to get If I Had Two Wings, which is a story collection. I'm going to give it to my dad because he likes short stories because he can't focus like his daughter. And then there's this another book called My Mother Laughs by Chantel Ackerman, who is a filmmaker. Yeah, and it just, I kind of love the way it looks. It's just black and white, which I think, I kind of love a black and white book. It looks good everywhere. And it's about Chantel Ackerman's relationship with her mother while her mother is dying. And I haven't read it, but it just, it looks very cool.
Very cool.
And that's it. All right, well, this was a joy, and thank you, my boys, for bringing it, and I'm very excited
thank
about
you
your holiday picks. You're welcome. I think we have plenty of books to go around for people to buy.
Absolutely.
Happy holidays. We love you.
Happy holidays, everybody. Thank you so much for listening this year.
Thanks all.
Bye.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye.
See ya.
Thanks, Team Bookable, for that wonderful check-in. Those are some excellent gift ideas, and I know your loved ones are really going to enjoy them. Extra special thanks to Neil Gaiman for all of his amazing recommendations. Might I suggest a book of Neil's for a gift, too? Why not start with the Neil Gaiman Reader? It's got a foreword from Marlon James, and then follow it up with one of my personal favorites, The Ocean at the End of the Lane, which won Book of the Year in 2013 from the British National Book Awards. That's like the Oscar of books in Britain. Bookable is a production of Loud Tree Media. I'm your host, Amanda Stern, 5 feet tall and hoping Santa brings me some platform shoes. We're produced by me, Beau Friedlander, and Andrew Dunn, who also mixes and sound designs the show. Beau is Loud Tree's editor-in-chief. Find us on the web at bookablepod.com and subscribe and rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows. And if you want to learn more about our guests, find us on Instagram at bookablepod and follow me, your host, at A Little Stern. From everyone here at Bookable and Loud Tree, happy holidays, everyone. Enjoy those books. This is Bookable.